Welcome back, everybody, to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery, recording still from beautiful Maddens on Gold Lake for AIGA Minnesota's design camp. And I have with me Kate Bingaman-Burt. Kate, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think we were discussing the first night that I think we've met.
Yes.
Know, probably a couple times, but it's been well over a decade ago. Because
well over a decade ago
you,
because, yeah.
You've gotten out of Nebraska and I have not.
I moved to, let me think, my first, I graduated from undergrad. That would have been like 1999. And then I moved to Omaha for my first job. And so I landed there. It was like right at the beginning of 2000. And I was in Omaha from 2000 to 2001, really. It wasn't that long. And then I ended up in Lincoln, and I was in Lincoln until 2004. But the company that I had worked with that I moved there for, I had spent a couple summers in Omaha too, and I have really good memories of Omaha and really good memories of Lincoln. So,
and since then, though, we've been – the internet has made it so we haven't forgotten about you because you're everyone, which is great.
Well, thank you.
starting with your massive obsessive compulsive drawings.
Uh-huh.
I think those even started when you were still in Nebraska.
I actually know the obsessive consumption project started, the photo documentation aspect of it started when I was in Nebraska, and then the drawing part started when I was in Mississippi. So that the drawing project started in 2006, but the seeds were planted definitely in all kind of the photo explorations, and the first few kind of obsessive documentation projects all started in Lincoln for sure. All the angst and general sadness and ulcer starting things happen in Omaha.
We have that effect on people.
But I, man, I just, I absolutely, absolutely loved being in Omaha. And I was involved in the AIGA chapter when I was in Omaha too. And actually, it was the 2000 art farm or art camp that happened in Nebraska City. I was like, helped kind of like with like workshop stuff. That was the year that Jim Sheridan was there and Amy Franceschi from Future Farmers. Dwayne Michaels. No, it was Dwayne Michaels. It was Dwayne Michaels, Amy Franceschi, and Jim Sheridan. It was truly a transformative experience for me because I got really into Jim Sheridan's letterpress workshop that he was doing. It was all handprint. The kind of just like making transfers with the ink. He brings all the blocks with them, and then we just make all these crazy prints. And I realized after taking that workshop, because I couldn't stop making stuff in that workshop. Like, sure. I was the last person in there, and I realized how much just the whole kind of how I knew that I needed to change something with my general work life. It became very evident at that workshop because it felt so good just to be making things with my hands and also just to be around other people that were really into it as well. I helped Jim clean up after the workshop. Like, I was just such a nerd. I just always loved school stuff. And then he invited me to have a drink with him and Amy Franceschi and Dwayne Michaels at the bar. And I was just so completely starstruck. And I had my very first Manhattan. Okay. I was 23, I think, at that time. And Dwayne Michaels was a huge idol of mine. And Amy Franceschi was just so inspiring with all the work that she was doing. It was just like the perfect blending of the three for me, because we've got Dwayne Michaels, who does all this amazing kind of writing with photography. And he's just this really just this legendary photographer who also kind of like has one foot in the art world and one foot in the design kind of photography editorial world. And then Amy Franceschi doing all these wonderful kind of creative projects that deal with people and the environment and just really very forward thinking. And then Jim Sheridan just like having this really just amazing kind of keeper of this legendary hat show press. And he's just so creative and wonderful. And like the blending of those three, I remember just sitting there like asking them so many questions and drinking my very first Manhattan, being like, okay, I've got to figure out like what it is that I want to do, because what I am doing is not making me feel very good. And that was just, I don't know, that's why I think that these kind of conferences and events and participating in workshops and then now like making those events happen are so important, because they can be so transformative to people. And I think especially for younger students too, who just kind of need that permission to go ahead and do that
thing.
This
is a big field. There's so much to do in
yeah.
it. And that's where I think this event is really done well with picking out who speaks, because all you speakers are so varied in what you actually do during the day.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's so many things, and I think that that's
and
a hard thing.
I think it is that it's that opening of the mind, like the, oh,
I don't have to do
what I learned in my class.
Exactly. And I think it's such a narrow thing when students choose to be graphic design majors. And it's rightfully so too, because it's like, oh, graphic design is X. And real, it's not just
well, the
X.
School does have to give you projects to work on of some sort.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think it's also, well, at least for me, like going into a design program, I think one of the reasons that I was so hesitant against it and why I didn't really start any graphic design classes until pretty late on in school was that I thought it was just all about like corporate logos. Because that's just like, I was very much skim the surface. And I had this really incredible design professor at undergrad who, I was hanging out in the ceramic studio all the time, because that was what I, like, that's what I was really enjoying. That's where the people I liked were. And that was the community that I kind of found for myself. And then he was diving down into the ceramic studio trying to find students. He was recruiting students for his graphic design class. And I thought you couldn't get dirty in graphic design. I thought that you couldn't, like, all these really stupid like like notions of what design was, because I just made up all this stupid stuff in my head. And he kind of blew my mind. He was like, no, it's not this, it's not that, what is wrong with you? And then he was really again, like another very transformative figure in my life, being like, no, come and take a class, I promise that you're gonna like it, you're gonna enjoy it. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there's no one in this profession. It does take a while to realize there's no one stopping you from doing the work you want to do.
No, but you are. Yeah. You're your own
and
biggest
you can't
enemy.
Do it, the client won't do it. It's like, you don't have to do it for that client.
No.
You can
no.
make up another client.
Exactly.
You can find a client that'll let you do it.
Exactly. Exactly. And we really put a lot of pressure on ourselves, and we put a lot of like ill-conceived notions in our head before we even start. So,
how do you get away from that? What's the best advice to like?
Oh my goodness, it's so hard. I think the best advice to keep remembering is that everyone kind of feels like that too, and you're not alone. And then just really like that, even the stuff that you feel like makes you feel like, well, maybe I'm crazy for liking this stuff, is actually the stuff that you should be pursuing, you know? If you feel like you're a little bit different, if you feel like the work that you're enjoying is not what other people are enjoying, if you feel like the things that you're interested in don't have other people that are interested in it, that's probably a really good start and a really good path to kind of nerd out on. So, and then you also realize once you start nerding out on that path that there's other nerds that are there too. So,
oh, yeah, they'll come out of the woodwork.
They totally
that's
do.
What's great.
I know, absolutely, absolutely.
All right, we'll be back with Kate in just a minute. So for those people who aren't familiar with your obsessive compulsive work or your other work, where do you recommend people go to check it out online?
Well, it's actually just my website is katebinghamandbert.com. I actually don't have a very good archive of all the kind of the photo documentations, the first pre all the daily drawing stuff that because the first site that was built with all of that happened in 2002, and it was a flash site, and I mean, this was before any,
wait, I'm
like,
trying to pull that up on my phone.
I know, right?
Wait, that's not, it's not coming up.
It was before like any, like, I mean, it was before Web 2.0. It was before blogging platforms. I mean, because essentially if Tumblr had been around, if Instagram had been around, if any of these platforms that so, it makes this everything so easy to share information, if that had been around, I don't think that site, like, I wouldn't have really have had to have built a site for it. But it essentially just that documented all of my purchases. And that's where, like, all the different interviews that I did with all these different people that would contact me about their favorite objects and the history of objects, that's where that lived. That's where all the photo studies lived. I have all the files on a, I want to say a zip disk.
Okay.
And then I do think I might have a couple CDs that I actually transferred from the zip to the CD, but I am still really good friends with the designer, the web designer who made that site for me. He actually is a colleague of mine now at Portland State University. He's one of my oldest friends. And we talk every once in a while about how we need to kind of figure out how to resurrect all of that and put that back online. So hopefully, I don't know, just for archival purposes, I'd like to get that back online. But all of my daily drawings, all 3,000 of them are on my website, along with my client work and then other automated projects and daily projects that I do too. So it's all on the katebingamandbird.com.
Okay. Do you have a current like thing that you're promoting? Like, cause these kind of moved around. They moved from, you talked in your presentation was great, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
If anyone's out there listening, you need to book a speaker. Book Kate.
Thank you.
There was an honesty and a humor in it that made the presentation also go by quickly.
Oh, thank you. Cause that was a long chunk when they said an hour.
When I see an hour and a half on the schedule for a speaker, I start to be like, I start to, you know.
Yeah, I really appreciate hearing that.
But it went by quick.
Thanks. So. I appreciate that. Also, I guess the stuff that I'm working on now, it's kind of funny because all the daily drawing.
Well, the other thing that was nice was in your presentation, like you showed how even though these are big different projects you worked on, they kind of led from one to another.
They did. They all flowed into each other. One, and I think that's that when I talk about kind of the, I'm a big advocate of thinking through making. And I think that's what was a hard time for me to get started way back, where I was doing too much thinking. I was just filling all these notebooks, and I couldn't get like the perfect project formulated in list form, so I wouldn't start it. I think sometimes you just have to kind of dive in, not really knowing where it's going to go. And once that switch was flipped in me, that's where all these different projects just kind of led into each other. Yeah, it went, the photo documentation to the credit card drawings to the daily drawing project.
Those of our listeners that aren't in on this, you actually redrew your credit card statements every month until your credit card.
I did. And I
without your credit card number on it.
No credit card number on it. And there wasn't any purchases on it either, because I banned myself from like purchasing anything. So it was just
that part of the reason with the drawing and posting online is that you're like, I can't purchase more.
Well, that's another thing too. It's like, yeah, because it would have also shown people that I was purchasing things on my credit card. Like, I wanted these statements just to be all about showing that I paid it. And then also I picked drawing at that point because I just didn't – I never felt comfortable with drawing. I mean, I would skip my drawing classes in school. I mean, the school was right next to a big lake, so I'd always go down to the lake instead. I mean, it was just – I don't know. There was just something – I had a real block on drawing. But through that process, which was initially supposed to be, a form of punishment, I actually really tricked myself into enjoying kind of the meditative quality of, drawing and observing something very intensely and just making lines and making marks. And that led to the daily drawing project, where I drew something that I purchased every single day.
Well, one of the guys I spoke to at dinner last night, he was all excited that in all your drawings, your writing just started going up and to the right as you wrote it. It wasn't straight lines.
It's not.
And he was actually, he said to him, that was great because that's how he writes. And he started to realize like, oh, it's okay if I write a little off.
It's okay.
It might even add some character to it.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because I feel like my handwriting started the a lot of the lettering that I do for clients now and a lot of the lettering that I do just for myself, that started because I was trying to emulate the machine typography that's on credit card statements. And so really, like, the root foundation of it is in something that's machine generated, but then you combine my hand into it, and then it just gets very wonky. And so it's like this really human computer that's making this work.
And if I remember right, based on you putting all these drawings up every day, and you started developing a style,
yeah,
you started getting illustration
work. I did. I fortunately had a really nice engagement with a lot of people through my photo projects and through my photo documentation projects. And so once I started doing my credit card drawing statements, that audience kind of carried over from there. And then once I started doing my daily drawings, at that point, TypePad like existed. And
sure.
So, and Flickr actually was really huge for me. Like, all of the documentation really started on Flickr and TypePad. And so that was in like 2006. And so about end of 2007 is when different art directors, you know, companies started asking me if I would do illustration work for them, which at that point, I was, again, it's just this kind of this accidental illustration career started, because at that point I was, you know, teaching full time at Mississippi State, and I felt really comfortable making work about design, about marketing, about general like consumption, about kind of like this research aspect, because I was working at a university and they were super supportive about
just like an education.
Exactly.
Thing with it.
They were super supportive of me doing installations and doing gallery shows. And so I was teaching graphic design, but I was making work about graphic design. And I liked that. But once I actually started doing illustration work, participating in that economy that I was making work about, it became even more enriching for me, and I felt like it made me a better teacher too, because here I was actually being an active participant in the career that I was teaching my students to be a part of. And so my advice and my experience became more knowledged and more valuable and more meaningful for my students too. And so I'm really, really, really pleased not only to be existing in the illustration field, but to also be able to share that with my students too, because I think it just added another layer to my teaching. And now I'm such an advocate for, you know, if you're gonna be a design instructor, a design professor, you should also be an active participant in that culture too, because that's just gonna make teaching that much better for everyone.
And when you say active participant, it's
yeah.
not like you have to be working for clients.
No.
But like what you were working was, you were working for design. You were
yeah.
actually creating things,
yeah.
even if the end goal was either just to go online
yeah.
or just for yourself or just for a gallery.
Exactly. But I mean, I feel like where I am able to help my students the most is by sharing with them, you know, how to work with people, how to write a good email, how to send effective invoices, like a lot of kind of almost like business and people strategy that I don't think I would have been employing those skills if I had kept doing the gallery shows, doing kind of like existing on the periphery. Now that I am kind of in the middle of it, I feel really good about being able to share those experiences, good and bad, with my students.
All right, we're going to be right back after one final break with Kate Bingaman Burt. All right, so how do I send a better invoice? You got me thinking. I'm like
well,
I needs to get paid.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. It's like I think it's all about client relationships, honestly. Yeah, we do everything via email now.
Right.
But whenever I start a new project, if I'm able to like even do a phone call where I can hear their voice or they can hear my voice, or send them like see if they have like include like an anecdote or a joke, just to kind of like, so you kind of like break down this like transactionary relationship that you have with a client and like humanize them and humanize me for them, that I feel like the relationship and the whole process of that experience is going to be so much better. And then that also is going to lead to like, oh, invoice came in. I'm going to send this off because I really enjoyed this whole process, this whole exchange that I had with her, because she's a human and I really like this human. So you are humanized instead of just like this service-based.
Okay, good, because yeah. I got that one down, because if anyone calls and they're at least in town, I'm like,
let's come over. Let's see.
I'm like, if I've never worked with you before, it's like, maybe you should stop by for 20, 30 minutes.
No, it's so true. It's so true.
At the very least, we'll see if we're going to work well together.
I know. And I actually, unfortunately, don't work with a lot of – I have some clients in Portland, but most of my clients are outside. And I think that's a way a lot of illustrators work too, where a lot of the people that you work with –
Well, they expect that if you're an illustrator, I mean, you work in your basement.
That you're just
you don't see the sun.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't know. Yeah.
And you don't own actual shoes.
You never. Wore pants, like that type of thing. Yeah. But yeah, so I think that's why it's also so important to just humanize yourself. And it's really difficult. It's really difficult for me. I feel like some of my most difficult client experiences have been when I've worked with people overseas, just because the time change is different, the language is different, communication styles are different. It's harder to do kind of the face-to-face thing. And so that I like work even harder to figure out how to make those connections feel a little bit more human.
And try to figure out how to make a meeting in the Bahamas work out.
Exactly, exactly. But my students, though, it's really funny, just like the nuts and bolts of invoicing, spend so much time like designing their invoice. I'm like, just why are you doing that? Are you actually going to mail this? Like, this doesn't even make any sense. Like, just pay $12 a month for Harvest, and like, that's your time tracking, that's your invoicing online stuff. I sometimes see, because I feel like sometimes, I mean, I would have thought that too, like, no, I'm gonna like make these really beautiful paper invoices. I'm like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. Just good communication, and then just let a service send out your stuff for you,
right,
too. So, but yeah, it's like little things like that.
And how do I send a better email? So that's the other thing you talked about.
So,
yo, bros. That's normally how I start it.
Just do research on the people that you're working with, you know?
Send photos of their kids with it?
Yeah, that would be super great. No, I feel like, again, it's just humanize the process. Like, you just be like, it's a very casual but yet very aware friendliness. My studio mates and I share a Dropbox that's just filled with all these different animated GIFs, and they're all organized really, really well. I'm a big fan of attaching a appropriate and related animated GIF to like whatever like topic is in the email, which is so stupid, but people love animated GIFs. And then just being very responsive, you know, like if someone emails you, email them back. And this all sounds like very, very basic, but you know, it's all communication.
I will say, you start to understand that there's certain people who they just know they don't respond to you for a week. They don't expect a reply for a week. But there's other people where they just want to know that you got the email.
Exactly.
So
they just want to know. They just want to know that they've been read and listened to.
I was working with somebody who's sending back, where I'm like, I realized, oh, he's not going to reply for 3 or 4 days, but he replies within the day that it was received.
Yeah.
And he just writes back. He writes received. And I'm like, oh, well, that sometimes works.
If
it's something where.
Yeah. I just, again, like if it's
received, I'll get to it in X date.
I think the email pitfall for me is whenever I receive an email that is so like, it could either be just so thoughtful, asking lots of really interesting questions. Like, I'm like, oh, I need to set that aside and find time to respond to that thoroughly. And then I forget to respond to it. And embarrassing, because that's like the absolute opposite. And so now whenever I get something like that, I respond to it right away. And then I thank them, you know, for their questions, their inquiry, let them know that I've received it, that it's, you know, whatever other details, and then being like, I will absolutely get back to this as soon as I can. But again, thank you so much for sending it. And I think that at least gets you out of the territory of being like the a-hole that didn't respond back to my email.
Right.
Because I just, the pit in my stomach when I realized that there's been this really wonderful email that I, again, in your head, you're like, oh, this is really great. I'm going to respond to this later. And then the exact opposite happens and you've just completely ignored it. It's like, cool. Yeah,
and I think key to that is also trying to keep your inbox somewhat clean.
Yeah.
Because nothing's worse than when it gets too messy.
Yeah, it's insane.
And students, reply to emails. If you write somebody and they plan on writing you back, be sure that you check for their reply.
Yeah. And then also, and this is, yeah, just, I think, and then also too, like when I love getting emails from students, I think maybe even some like pro tips for students when sending emails though, do your research before you send an email. If this is, and then also some pro tips for some teachers, don't assign papers where you're requiring students to ask somebody that they admire to respond to 20 questions for a paper that's due later that week.
Oh.
That's like, even if it's just like one or two questions, the one or two questions, that's so much more manageable and so much more easy to respond to. And the responsiveness rate is going to be that much higher too. And then I feel, because a lot of times
I think 20 questions seems like a lot anyway, because if you're you have like three or four good questions.
Exactly.
And you're just making up questions.
Exactly. And a lot of that other stuff you can find online if you do research. And so it's just kind of like, do your research first and just like, you know, one or two or three questions is, and so that's what the thing it's like. I'm like, I kind of, when I see those questions, I'm just like, teachers, come on. Don't do that. Just fewer questions.
All right. Well, Kate, it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sorry that Omaha caused ulcers and stuff.
No, it was great. It was a perfect time for that to happen. So, still all like a huge Nebraska fan. So,
all right.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully catch up with you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.